Welcome to Hey Ghost Hey, the podcast about ghosts, ghost hunting, and other paranormal phenomena of the Pacific Northwest. I am your host, Charles Crooks, owner, tour guide, and psychic of Bellingham Ghost Tours. We are here because I like ghosts a lot. Now let's begin. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of Hey Ghost Hey. First off, I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who listened to the premiere episode of season 2, as it was the most downloaded episode I've ever had within its first week. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone in the Pacific Northwest and even outside of the Pacific Northwest. I always kind of wonder if this won't resonate for anyone if you are outside of the area, but there's been quite a few people outside in the U.S. and even internationally as well that have been listening. So thank you very much. It is very, very appreciated. All right, so we're just going to dive right into today's episode. And so over the summer, I did a few projects for myself. So one was a kind of companion podcast to Hey Ghost Hey, and that was called Chucked and Blessed. And that was focusing more on psychic and spiritual topics and kind of that whole realm of things as a general introduction, but also keeping them in a grounded way, as I like to do with everything in the paranormal world here. And then also, I did a ghost hunting road trip throughout the west side of Washington State and hit on a few locations. So this episode is going to be part one of that road trip, and then we're going to see part two after the Halloween episode. So we are still on Whidbey Island for this episode, starting in the Coopville area again, where we left off in the first episode of this season. So our first focus for this episode is the Captain Whidbey Inn. I first learned about the Captain Whidbey when I was doing research for my new tour, the Practical Ghost Tour, which is in Coopville, Washington. So that tour features filming locations of the movie Practical Magic, as all the town scenes were filmed there. And then I also feature ghost stories of Whidbey Island. And so, of course, I wanted to get as much from the Coopville area as possible. And so, luckily, the Captain Whidbey is very much within that radius, and even very close to the downtown Coopville area. So if you're not familiar with it, then from the heart of Coopville along Penn Cove there, you would just drive a few minutes north along the coast, and you reach this beautiful rustic, or former rustic hunting lodge that is now an inn, and you can stay there, and even has a lovely restaurant there as well. And it has also ghosts, or at least quite a few ghost stories. So that is what drew my attention. So before I get into my experiences, let's just start with some of the history for the location itself. The Captain Whidbey Inn was built in the fall and winter of 1907 from Madrona logs in stone found on site by Chris Fisher and his son Edward. The post and beam construction with the log infill sits intact as originally built. Larry Fisher, Chris Fisher's great-grandson, still works occasionally on the inn. It was opened in May 1907 as part of a large recreation retreat then called Still Park. The inn and park were developed by Judge Lester Still. The park also had camping, cabins, horse trails, tennis courts, and a warm saltwater swimming pool. A collection of pictures from that period remain in a history collection at the inn. The inn originally contained 15 sleeping rooms upstairs and a large gathering room downstairs with a two-sided fireplace. The fireplace was faced with native stone. It still forms the central meeting place for the inn. Daily steamers from both Seattle and Everett were the original links to the outside world, bringing passengers, supplies, and mail to the dock located at the eastward-facing front of the inn. Parts of the original dock and stone stairway can still be seen while walking the current pier. Automobile access was available via ferry before Deception Pass Bridge was completed in 1935. Judge Still is credited with bringing the first automobile to Whidbey Island. The vehicle can still be seen at the Island County Historical Society Museum. Over time, the inn has served as a general store, a girls' school, and a post office. The property returned to offering accommodations open to the public in 1946. Today, the inn appears very similar to the way it was when it was built. The original wood floors are still visible in both the lobby and the bar. The large gathering room has become the dining room, kitchen, and Judge Still's tavern. Over the years, electricity as well as Wi-Fi have been installed and upgraded throughout the building. The original inn now houses two suites and 10 regular rooms upstairs, overlooking Penn Cove and the gardens. The original cabins are now gone and have been replaced by four waterside cabins with private decks, views of Penn Cove, and kitchens. The lagoon building houses 13 rooms that overlook the lagoon and lawn. Each of these rooms has a unique style filled with rustic charm. Guests can arrive either by car or during the summer at the inn's dock by boat or float plane. And that very brief history came from the Captain Whidbey page on Wikipedia. Okay, so as far as my stay went, I ended up staying two nights over the summer. This was in August. And I really went in blind, not having any idea what to expect or not really knowing any of the ghost stories or activity going on. If possible, I really prefer to do it this way, or if I have multiple nights in a location, just so that way I can go in completely unbiased to really see what I see and what I feel without having any sort of influence on any sort of story or experience. And so the first thing that I noticed, I stayed in the main hunting lodge, or the old hunting lodge, and to even get up to the rooms, you have to go up this really narrow stairwell, and the stairs are pretty tall. And luckily, I had a few big hikes coming up later that week, so the extra workout of the legs really helped me, but I could understand how for others that would be quite problematic. But it was a lovely building, and everything was very clean, very well taken care of. And when you get to your room, there's a little rope going across the doorway that makes it seem like you're staying in an old ship, which is kind of cool. So definitely some old-timey historical vibes, which is fun. But the first thing that I noticed when I got into my room was, one, you could literally hear everything around you. You could hear from outside, you could hear below you, you could hear to the rooms next to you. And I wasn't mad about it, because obviously it's a historical building, and that's going to come with some quirks for sure. But you could literally hear everything. So I could fully understand that if you're lying in bed at night and you might not be fully aware of what's going on, it could be very easy to misconstrue some sound as something else, or think that it might be something ghostly when it's not. So, of course, we have to be aware of all the natural stuff that we've got going on, and that was definitely a possibility. And secondly, the one thing that I noticed when I walked into my room is that the floor slanted greatly towards the windows. And so it wasn't a big room. It was just pretty much a bed, a little bench, and had a little sink in there as well. And as soon as you walked towards the windows, you immediately felt like you were going to be pulled towards the windows, because there was an obvious slant towards it. So already there were some funky things about the space that I was going into, but it's good to be aware of those things and note them. And so just be aware and kind of move on. So that's exactly what I did. So before I got into my investigation for the first night, I took some time and just kind of meandered around the grounds to see what I could feel. And there's so many lovely spots to hang around all the different buildings throughout the property. And I will say that the grounds were absolutely my favorite part of the place, because there are so many different spaces where you can just hang out and relax. My favorite part being the wraparound porch around the main part of the inn, or the main building there, and you can just hang out and look out at the water and observe what's going on. So that was lovely, but I took some time to hang out there and just feel what I could feel psychically, as I don't always use that on all of my investigations, but when I have the time, when I have the space, I kind of like to do both methods, from the psychic to using all the tools. So when I sat down and tuned into the space, immediately I got a sense that there is a very, very strong just sense of residual energy that hangs around the property. Now, keep in mind, residual are like the energy echoes compared to intelligent energy, where we actually have spirits communicating back and forth with us. So to me, it felt like kind of just energetic layers that have stacked up over time that exist there and can be experienced. So there were two initial energies that I felt. One was kind of the energy of a grumpy man who walks around the grounds. And then secondly, I felt the energy of an older woman who wanders the hallways of the inn. But other than that, I really didn't get any sense of other particular spirits or energies that are hanging around. But I did feel that the land was very full. It was very energetically full. And even though I felt two specific entities, I feel that there's a lot more going on there. So I just kind of wrote down my impressions and went on with the evening. And so that evening, I then used all the ghost hunting tools, primarily in my room and just in the little common seating area outside of the room. And of course, there were other guests staying there, so I had to do it respectfully and quietly. But anytime I used any of the devices, they were all very quiet, especially the flux responder, which I had great success with at the Whidbey Island House for both nights at the Captain Whidbey Inn. I don't think I even got a single hit or even what seemed like a false positive. Usually when I let that device run for a while, or even an hour to 2 hours, you might get a hit here or there, and you always have to wonder if that is something. But overall, it's pretty quiet. But in this location, I got nothing, not even any false positives, nothing to even really make me think that anything was moving around in the room other than me. And I would say I got a few hits on the ovulus that might have been significant. But I think what was interesting was that I got the word beer twice, not just on the first night, but on the second night as well. And I did remember reading somewhere that the inn at one point throughout its history was used as a prohibition kind of stop to move product on to other places. So that was interesting. I also got the word hunt, as it was a hunting lodge in its earlier days. So there were a few words that seemed like it could have matched. But overall, anything that the ovulus kicked out, especially on the first evening, really did not make me think that I was actively talking to anyone there. And so that pattern continued into the second night, which was extremely quiet. Now, again, I had mentioned earlier that I wasn't necessarily staying in the haunted room itself. However, in most locations, you would still expect to find activity kind of wandering throughout, especially if it is intelligent. So everything that I kind of experienced really just made it stack up and seem like that there is a lot of residual energy versus intelligent. Now, of course, I'm not going to say that there's not intelligent energy there at all. It's just based on what I experience, it seems more residual. So what we do know to be happening at the inn is that I have heard two primary accounts of activity. Number one being room 7. So room 7 is most notoriously the room that I have heard to be haunted. And I even had someone on my very first practical ghost tour that said that they worked at the hotel and that they often had people leave in the middle of the night from room 7. So next time I stay there, absolutely going to go for that room. But what we do know is that there is a spirit of a young woman that's said to haunt the room in that is seen in period clothing, and that sometimes she is seen as a full body apparition and sometimes she is seen as just a shadow figure. But when she is seen, she often gives people a very uncomfortable feeling, which is natural, especially if you are seeing something uncommon like that. But then also, she is known for sitting on the bed and people will actually feel depressions or see a depression of someone sitting on the bed. Now, for me, that is where I like to draw the line, because the bedroom and the bathroom are absolute no-no haunting spaces for me. I like those to be my private spaces, so I can understand how if you are experiencing that in a very tiny room, especially in the middle of the night, that that would be very unnerving. And then secondly, I believe that I picked up on the energy of the woman who is known as the matron when I initially did my kind of psychic feel out. And she is known to wander the halls of the inn, and sometimes I've even heard reports of her cleaning up after people in their rooms or even tidying up for them, and that they'll come back to their room with things a little bit tidier than when they left, and that they know room service hasn't been in there either. So those are the primary two accounts of what I have heard are going on at the inn. So, knowing about the activity, I was looking forward to coming home and reviewing all of the evidence I had collected from both nights. And after I did, I realized that I got absolutely nothing. And that made me really sad. Especially because I had really good luck in the first season. Even though I did a lot of those investigations on the fly and it was a big push doing the investigations from week to week. But still, somehow, some way, I still got evidence that I was able to share with everyone. So extremely lucky that I got multiple episodes with new evidence. And so the reality is that you're just not going to have every single investigation pay off. That is the hurtful reality of ghost hunting. And as much as I would love to say that I found anything solid or had an amazing experience, it just wasn't the case for at least my stay with staying at the Captain Whidbey. So do I think that there's not anything going on there? Not at all. I just think that just because I don't experience it doesn't mean, for one, that there's not stuff happening, but also, too, that I think that it does lend a little bit more credence to there being a kind of residual energy that you can't necessarily call out on command. And so I really kind of debated whether I would possibly play some other evidence that I've gotten from other investigations at this end of this episode, because I still love being able to share that. But I've decided, because it is part of reality and that you are not going to find stuff, that I'm just going to leave it as is and not try to force something else into this episode at the end. So just beware that there's going to be no surprise EVPs in this one, unfortunately, but it was still a very cool experience, and I'm still very glad I got to go there and stay there, as, like I said, it's a very lovely building, and the grounds are incredible, and it's just a really cool space with really good energy. And so throughout my research into this, I did find a few other encounters that people have had online, and so I'm going to share those with you before we move on to our next location. Okay, so these are just anecdotes that I have found through various websites about hauntings where people can share their experiences. So unfortunately, these are completely anonymous and I have no way to look into them to see how accurate or true they are. but interesting. So I'm just going to share a little bit of both here. So the first one, my daughter of four at the time we stayed here, meaning the inn, kept talking about one of her new girlfriends she was making there. She was the only kid checked in at the inn. My wife and I both watched our daughter talk to what seemed like several kids and maintain this conversation till my wife picked her up to go downstairs for dinner. And so definitely interesting, because at least I have not heard a lot of reports of child ghosts in this space, but it's totally possible. And again, I kind of lean towards more of that residual energy, like I mentioned, but that does not mean that we don't have the possibility of spirits. And you never know, that children might attract other kids or other sorts of energy that are similar to them. So it is very, very possible. Okay, now on to the second anecdote here. I'm just going to read a portion of this as this gets a little bit rambly, but this is not about the inn itself, but a house right next to it. So here we go. So I have never stayed in the inn itself, but I lived in one of the houses, one house away from the inn when I was growing up. I lived there for about 10 years. Me and my sister still remember the house to this day. We would hear people walking upstairs, distinct footsteps, when there was nobody else home. The only reason I found out that it was both of us experiencing this was because I told my sister I heard footsteps, and she told me that she heard the same and neither of us would be home at the time. I also remember I had the biggest bedroom downstairs, and I would leave the door open because I always had an eerie feeling. I was so scared to sleep in that bedroom, and when I left the door open because it would close on its own, or I closed the door, it would open on its own. Yes, I understand drafts, but this was not a draft, even when the door was closed and locked. And I'm telling you, it was locked and the door would freaking open. I actually had all windows along the whole side of the bedroom so I could see outside at the beach, and it was beautiful, but at night I remember several times, if I didn't have the curtains over the windows, I would see faces in my windows. It scared the hell out of me. This is not a myth. And so this anecdote goes on a little bit more, basically just to say that even though they had these what seemed like spookier encounters, that they were never harmed by the spirits there. But of course, when you get to the very end of the anecdote, it does say, and I'll just quote to be exact here, I do believe that the whole area, I do believe that that whole entire area is haunted because it was in fact built, all the houses and the inn, on an Indian burial ground years and years and years ago. Now, of course, keep in mind that as much as Hollywood loves to tell us that being on native burial grounds can be a very bad thing, keep in mind too that because we don't have that recorded history, that we probably have lots of different structures on burial grounds that we don't know about. So is it possible? Absolutely yes. But I think for the purpose of their story, they were definitely making it seem like that is the sole reason why that land has activity. So I find that, again, as I kind of mentioned last season, that you don't necessarily find even graveyards or grave areas to even be that haunted, because at least not for intelligent activity, we don't see a lot of hauntings. But I do believe that when you do have the awareness to the people that have passed on, that they can come visit you in a respectful way. Okay, so moving on to our next location for this episode. So during my trip, I initially had plans to go out to San Juan Island and do some investigating out there. But, of course, life happens and things change, and that did not happen. So I ended up going to Fort Casey itself. Now, I've gone around to areas of the fort, but I've never actually investigated the old fort grounds itself or the lighthouse. So I went there instead. And unfortunately, when I went there, of course, the whole purpose was try to find EVPs on the property. But the nearby Naval Air Station nearby in Oak Harbor was doing exercises with jets. So, of course, the noise pollution was very real and very loud. So I was not able to get any sort of recordings there either. But let's just go into a very brief history of the fort before we go into some of the reports of what's going on in the area. Fort Casey was a 19th century defensive fortification built on Whidbey Island, Island County, Washington, to deter invasion from the sea. It is preserved as Fort Casey Historical State Park, a Washington State Park and Historic District within the Eby's Landing National Historic Reserve. Admiralty Inlet was considered so strategic to the defense of Puget Sound in the 1890s that three forts, Fort Casey on Whidbey Island, Fort Flagler on Marrowstone Island, and Fort Warden at Port Townsend, were built with the intention to create a triangle of fire against invading ships. This military strategy was based on the theory that the three fortresses would thwart any invasion attempted by sea. Fort Casey was named for Brigadier General Thomas Lincoln Casey, U.S. Army Chief of Engineers. Designed as part of the massive modernization program of the U.S. Seacoast fortifications initiated by the Endicott Board, construction on Fort Casey began in 1897. In 1901, the big guns on disappearing carriages, which could be raised out of their protective emplacements so that the guns were exposed only long enough to fire, became active. However, the fort's batteries became obsolete almost as soon as their construction was completed. The invention of the airplane in 1903 and the subsequent development of military aircraft made the fort vulnerable to air attack. In addition, the development of battleships designed with increasingly accurate weaponry transformed the static strategies of the 19th century into more mobile attack systems of the 20th century. Most of Fort Casey's guns and mortars were removed during World War I when they were mounted on rail cars to serve as mobile heavy artillery. Some of these weapons were returned to the fort after the war and were scrapped during World War II as 16-inch guns and other weapons at other forts superseded them. So once again, that is thanks to Wikipedia for that very basic introduction to Fort Casey and its history. But as far as the reports of paranormal activity go, again, I think that we are seeing more residual energy kind of stacked up in the area that people experience from time to time. So most of the time when people walk through the actual structures of the fort, now I will say, especially even if you go during broad daylight, when you start to go through some of the backs of these buildings or deeper under some of the areas there, that it gets very, very dark back there to the point where you have to use a flashlight to explore some of the rooms if you want to be able to see. So already there's a very different feeling in the atmosphere, especially as you go deeper into the structures, because it gets cold and dark and kind of damp back there. So already that can lead to a more haunting kind of atmosphere. But there's all sorts of reports of people being able to pick up recordings, and of course that's what I went to try and find, but had no luck. And people also report seeing shadow figures, like thinking that it's one of their friends that they see walk by. They go to follow them and find no one there. And they also hear just random voices or disembodied voices going on of people around them, or try to think that they're going to go around a corner and see a person, but instead they can't find anyone again. So again, all sorts of residual activity doesn't necessarily seem to give us direct answer and response and intelligence. But then also on the property of the fort, we have the Admiralty Head Lighthouse. And here is just a brief structure. I'm sorry. Here is just a brief history for that structure. All right. This is coming from historylink.org. The Admiralty Head Lighthouse, built in 1903 by the Army Corps of Engineers, is located in Fort Casey State Park near Coopville on Whidbey Island. The beacon high on a bluff 127 feet above sea level was an important navigational aid, especially for sailing ships entering Admiralty Inlet from the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It replaced the Red Bluff Lighthouse, a wooden Cape Cod-style structure built in 1861. Although decommissioned in 1922, the Admiralty Head Lighthouse received national recognition in 1990 when the U.S. Postal Service selected it for a collection of 5 commemorative lighthouse stamps honoring the U.S. Coast Guard's bicentennial. Today, in 2021, when this article was created, Admiralty Head Lighthouse is open seasonally with educational exhibits in the lighthouse. Washington State Park volunteer docents greet visitors and can answer any questions visitors may have. There is also a gift shop that supports educational efforts at the lighthouse and park. Meanwhile, restoration and educational efforts continue to be supported by Lighthouse Environmental Programs and its membership organization, Keepers of Admiralty Head Lighthouse. And so you can actually go into the lighthouse itself, into the tower and the house, which I just stated is a little museum section. And very cool views up there of going up top. But as far as any ghostly activity goes around the lighthouse, I feel like we see one of the most common ghost tropes, not only just in the country, but around the world. And so we really don't know much about this ghost story other than it seems to be passed on throughout history and now throughout the history of the internet, as it seems to be the most recounted activity of what's going on. And so it is believed that this lighthouse has the spirit of a woman that is seen in white wandering around the grounds. Now, we don't have any sort of historical context to who this woman might be, but the woman in white is a ghost trope that we see all around the world. And so keep in mind that there may be truth to this, that there may be truth to the encounters that people are saying they have, but also it is one of the most common ghost stories that we often see, where you don't have to have a lot of backstory to it. It's just kind of one of those unexplained things that people accept, and often it's a woman who is usually wronged in some sort of way, or she's usually murdered before some big event, or just overall kind of tragic story. And so just keep in mind that we see this story a lot. I have not encountered any sort of activity myself of the woman in white around the lighthouse, but it's still a very cool lighthouse and you should go check it out. Who knows, maybe if you call out to her, maybe she'll show herself to you. So if you find her, let me know. I would love to hear. But then lastly, we are going to swing by one more location on the grounds of Fort Casey, and that are the old officers' cabins. So you can actually rent these out today. They are currently owned by the Snohomish YMCA, and you have to reach out to them directly if you want to rent them. But there's a row of 4 duplexes, and you can see them from the road there. And this was probably about now 10 years ago or so. And my friend Elena, who I mentioned in the first season, or actually who I interviewed in the first season about her experiences, her and I used to run a ghost hunting class together. And so we went and did a special kind of 5-year anniversary ghost hunting event at one of these duplexes. Now, we had no idea what kind of activity that we were going to encounter, if any. We just kind of thought it was a nice historic building and why not go check it out? So We did a special night event where we ghost hunted all night long. And back then, it was around when people were starting to use the SLS device. And so the SLS initially was when people would take an Xbox Kinect camera and they realized that you could use that camera for ghost hunting because it is made to pick up human movement. And so when it identifies human movement, it maps out that movement on a screen as a green stick figure. So if you watch any of the ghost shows, you've probably seen this device before. So the idea is that it can show you when it detects some sort of movement and maps it out with a human figure. So we had someone with this device, and they went upstairs to one of the bedrooms, and they called everyone over and said, you have to come look at this. So as soon as we all kind of huddle around the screen, we notice that there are stick figures indeed on the screen. One is standing up, and it looks like the other stick figure is kneeling down in front of it, and they're kind of wiggling around a little bit. So now I'll let you use your imagination as to what those stick figures might have been doing. But then they changed, and it gave us a little more information to the picture of what was going on. And so we then saw two stick figures that were laying horizontally, one on top of the other, and they were also wiggling around. And they kind of changed from these two positions, from the standing and kneeling down to the two horizontal and back and forth. And after they did this a few times, then they just disappeared. And so I like to bring this story up because I think that when we often look for ghosts, we often think that we're going to encounter something a little bit more otherworldly. However, it is my experience that I have found time and time again that when it comes to ghosts or ghostly activity, oftentimes it just mirrors daily life more than we think. And so I think that we possibly might have captured either whether it was intelligent because it did seem to have awareness and disappear after we saw it, or maybe it was just a residual energy echo that kind of got left behind. I don't know. I like to imagine that the officers were helping each other out, that were hanging out on those cold, dark winter nights, but who knows? Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Maybe there were some other people in there, but we don't know. And so either way, it was very funny. It was still a good experience. And it was just one of those experiences that remind me that even though things are ghostly, even though things are weird, it still comes back to the human experience. And so I always talk about on the tours that we are very curious in them, and that they can be equally curious in us, and that we still see that human curiosity. Rather. And I think that that resonates more than, again, what Hollywood tells us of how ghosts exist and how people experience hauntings and ghostly activities. So, all right, that is part one of my summer road trip down to Whidbey Island. And so next up, we are going to have our special bonus Halloween episode. I've got two stories picked out. And the first story is going to conclude our time on Whidbey Island. But it's my favorite story that I shared during the Practical Ghost Tour. And then lastly, I'm going to include a story that I really have not shared much throughout any of my experience. Definitely have not done it on the tours, about a dream that I had when I was a teenager. And so that is officially going to wrap up our episode for today. So I cannot thank you enough for being here and for being open as always. So thank you so much for listening. I look forward to seeing you on Halloween itself, the reason for the season. And I hope you have a wonderful and safe Halloween week. So until next time, stay spooky, my friends.